She shook her head.
No, I wasn't strong enough. I don't have much skill at water shaping. Just a little bit of water calling training from when I was a little girl. Why did you believe your sister may have had something to do with making the poison?
The Rethri sorceress closed her hands into fists.
When I inspected the wound, I realized the poison involved components from multiple different dominions. That made it harder to treat, so all I could do was slow it down. I put up a wall to protect Mea, Jonin, and Nakane, and went out to fight with the remaining assassins, and I chased the ones who were still standing away. I released all but one of the assassins I had captured. One that I recognized, though he did not seem to recognize me.
Voriana opened her left hand and wrapped it around her right fist.
Shivarin was Liara's bodyguard when she was a child. He served House Dianis for more than 3 decades. I remember him being kind and above all, loyal. He was barely conscious when I found him. The cold from my prison had made him weak. I released him from the ice, but bound him with my vision. I made him speak. Loyalty. That's what drove him to go, along with a dozen others, to kidnap the remaining members of House Theus. They would have spared no one. Most of them belonged to some kind of organization. It sounded like a cult to me, but Shivarin wasn't one of them. I couldn't make him tell me who gave him the orders. His desire to protect his master was too strong for me to break in limited time, and so I freed him, but not without leaving a mark.
You plan to track him later?
Jonin noted. Voriana nodded in reply.
An organization? That's progress, at least. Does this group have a name? He called them Disciples of the First. Unfortunately, since he was not a member, he didn't know many details. But his impression was that this was primarily a political move. He would not have agreed to kill anyone. His belief was that the captured family members would be ransomed to Edric Theus, but I believe it was intended to be a trap for Edric.
I know of that group,
Aladir looked downcast,
though only in vague terms. 5 years ago, when Lord Lorien Augusti was found dead in his home, the man we arrested for the crime claimed to be a disciple of that organization.
I remember that.
Lydia took a sharp breath.
Something Weidman, I think.
Aladir nodded.
Tyrus Weidman. He had been a petty thief with no ties to any known criminal organizations, but he somehow bypassed significant sorceress defenses to assassinate Augusti, who was a renowned duelist. By the time we caught Weidman, he was deep in the throes of substance withdrawal. Ash, I think.
Lydia hadn't been part of that investigation, but Aladir had told her about it before.
Didn't he claim that he could see the future?
Right. He said he was a disciple of the First and a servant of the Shrouded One. He insisted that Augusti had to be killed to preserve the fate of the world.
Well, that certainly sounds ominous, Jonin remarked. But charismatic leaders often use sorcery to manipulate their followers and make them see things that aren't there. He gave Voriana a meaningful look. Aladir turned to Jonin.
That's essentially what my commander said at the time. But regardless of their leader's actual capabilities, I believe this Shrouded One exists, as does his organization. Weidman could not have had the resources to perform an assassination of that level of complexity on his own, and his withdrawal symptoms made him sufficiently incoherent that he could not identify his cohorts. Even if he did identify someone, we couldn't trust it to be anything other than a hallucination from his drug use.
That's a cruel tactic, but I can't say it sounds ineffective. Jonin scratched his chin. So, Voriana, you believe your sister may have been a part of this group because of her association with the guard you interrogated? Voriana nodded.
And because of her knowledge of obscure poisons. As I'm sure Aladir is aware, a doctor is one of the most dangerous possible assassins.
She took another step back.
But I can't believe she would have done something like this knowingly. She's never... She wouldn't want to do anyone harm.
Lydia nodded.
Let me ask you a question, Voriana. Or let's just dispense with that for now. Riala, that multiple dominion poison. Do you believe your sister has the capability to make something like it? Yes, but she'd never... Perhaps she wouldn't have used the poison herself, but she may have made it, if only for research purposes. When I inspected the poison, I found that it had been altered before it was cured. The alteration to the poison made it appear to be the same as the one that had killed Calceres. I can think of no motive for altering the poison other than misdirection. Someone wanted anyone who inspected the poison to believe it was the same type that the assassin used before. Which, of course, means Liara Dianis is the primary suspect. She could have altered the poison herself before treating it, which would have removed the vast majority of the evidence of her involvement. As someone from House Dianis and a specialist in poison research, she would also have been familiar enough with the types of sorcery used to investigate poisons to take that kind of precaution. This also implies that whoever made the second poison was aware of the composition of the first. That could mean there are multiple assassins working together, or it could mean that whoever made the alteration to the poison had an opportunity to investigate Calceres' body and wanted to deflect blame for the second attack onto the original assassin. Interesting.
Jonan rubbed his head. If you'll forgive me for interjecting, I think I have a way we might be able to gather some more evidence one way or another, if one of you will help me walk. I'm still feeling a little lightheaded.
Voriana took a step closer, but Aladir moved to intercept her. I think it would be best if you stay out of reach until we can confirm your innocence, Miss Voriana.
I will assist Jonan.
Lydia slipped an arm under Jonan's uninjured shoulder.
Let's see this evidence of yours.
The room was filled with mirrors, but none of them carried Lydia's reflection. Glancing from side to side, Lydia marveled at the vast array of images displayed in each of the shining surfaces. In one, she saw a pair of guards moving with purpose down a hallway. In another, the last remaining member of House Theus living within the manor, her hands smudged with ink. Nakane scratched at a piece of parchment with a quill, then as Lydia watched, tore the scroll to shreds and tossed the remains into a pile of similarly destroyed documents on the side of her table. In a third, she saw Baroness Theus's chamber, now empty. It was to that mirror that Jonan moved, slipping free of Lydia's grasp. Thanks for the help. I can take things from here.
What is all this?
Aladir watched the mirror in which Nakane was pictured, a look of concern on his face.
One of our security measures.
Riala folded her arms.
Mare is usually in here. I think that's how he found us last night.
Lydia glanced at Jonan.
I knew you said you were taking some precautions, but this?
Another of my many secrets? Ruined, alas. But in this case, it may provide us with a bit of insight. He ran his finger across several symbols etched on the side of the frame of the mirror that displayed Nadelia's room, and the image within blurred and shifted. This might take a while. Riala frowned, tilting her head to the side.
What are you doing? Even I haven't seen you making changes to these.
Finding the right moment. You may want to take a seat. At first, Lydia watched in fascination as Jonan touched the symbols and the surface of the mirror. She realized that the image had initially showed the current state of the Baroness's room, like looking through a window, but now he was somehow shifting the image back to a previous point in time.
Some sort of sight sorcery effect combined with the dominion of memory, perhaps?
She had used one of Jonan's hand mirrors to send him messages for several months, but she never had known he had access to something more sophisticated. This seemed to resemble the world's memory, a legendary artifact capable of seeing through time itself.
Perhaps that was his inspiration for all this.
As minutes passed and the image continued to show nothing of interest, Lydia felt her mind wandering to the letter that Aladir had discovered within the room they were watching. She sat down, motioning for Aladir to sit next to her.
Aladir, can I see the letter you were showing me earlier?
He frowned, as she had expected. He probably did not want the other two being aware of its existence. But so long as they did not know the contents of the letter, she didn't think looking it over would be a problem.
Fine.
He passed it back to her, and she examined the words again.
Do not mourn me. I am doing what I must do in order to protect what remains of our family. Am I taking the coward's path to avoid facing you? No. I wish that I had the time left to see you one last time, but that is not to be Sometimes fate forces our hand, and for that I am sorry.
Lydia frowned, glancing at Voriana nervously, and then back to the note, and considered the unusual structure again. It was one of the simplest forms of hiding a message within a message. All she had to do was take the first letter of each word to form another.
Dianis.
Lydia folded the letter and handed it back to Aladir.
This had been no suicide, at least not without provocation.
With her final words, Nadelia had named her killer's house. She had not, however, named her killer. Ah! Jonan pulled his hand away from the mirror. The image on the glass was Nadelia Theus standing on the windowsill, preparing to jump. There was no one behind her. No other figure to force her out. The Baroness looked back into her room one last time, mouthing something Lydia failed to catch, before turning and stepping into the open air.
Go back further,
Lydia instructed. Aladir put a hand to his forehead.
I'm not sure I wanted to see that.
Jonan complied with Lydia's request, moving his hand to the sigils again. They watched with fascination as Nadelia reappeared in the room, moving backward until she sat at her writing table, and a figure moved backward into the room. Torian Dianis, Riala and Liara's father. Jonan continued to move backward until he found the moment when Torian first entered the room, and then pressed a series of sigils, showing the scene playing forward as if it was occurring in the present time. Torian Dianis stood near the door to the chamber, folding his hands in front of him. Baroness Theus had been sitting in a chair near the window when he entered, the same chair that she sat in when she watched the games of crowns that Lydia had observed with her. She had a book sitting unread in her lap. She did not stand when Torian entered. She simply spoke, showing no sign of concern. Aladir stood and walked closer to the mirror.
Does your mirror store their voices? I can't read their lips, and Torian is facing away from our view.
No, only an image. I do not have any knowledge of sound sorcery. Jonan looked down.
I'm sorry. It's the best I can do.
Voriana had backed away to near the entrance to the mirror room, and she was clenching her jaw tightly, a look of intense focus on her face. As the scene played out, Nadelia stood, looking bemused, and then moved to a writing table. Torian walked closer, leaning over her, and waving a hand at the inkwell. And Lydia watched as Nadelia wrote the letter that Aladir had just shown her, under Torian's watchful eyes. She wrote slowly, deliberately, and Torian demonstrated growing frustration as he watched her.
He forced her to write a suicide note, but she took her time, thinking about each line carefully so that she could implicate him in the only way she could think of.
When she had concluded writing the letter, Torian raised a hand, pointed at Nadelia, and left the room.
Jonan,
Lydia stood up.
Move the image back to where he is leaning over her while she writes the note, and keep the image there.
She turned her head toward Voriana.
I'm sorry. It would appear that Torian is at least involved, if not the killer himself.
Aladir stood next to her.
I believe we have an arrest to make.
Voriana's expression was venomous as she said,
I will accompany you.
Torian Dianis was sitting in the courtyard playing a game of crowns against Liara when Aladir arrived with the city guard at his heels. The swarm of guards that arrived to arrest Torian was more than Lydia judged to be strictly necessary, but Aladir always did pride himself on being thorough.
What's all this?
The blue-eyed Rethri glanced around briefly as the guards formed a ring around him and then looked back toward the board on the table. Aladir stepped out of the ring of guards, drawing his sword.
Torian Dianis, in accordance with the laws of Xeracillus and the people of this city, you are hereby called to the House of Justice to answer to the charges of conspiracy and murder.
Torian glanced up from the table toward Aladir.
Give me just a moment. We have a few moves left.
Liara stood up immediately, looking around with wide eyes as more blades sang free from their scabbards.
What is this? What's he talking about, father?
The Rethri man sighed.
You've ruined it now.
He casually cast a hand across the table, knocking several pieces to the stone below.
Very well. Arrest me. This should provide some brief entertainment, at least.
Liara, please step away from your father. Aladir took a step closer.
No! Explain yourself!
Liara stepped in front of her father, raising both of her hands.
My father would never kill someone, and we're only here because you asked us to be!
Tirion put a hand on his daughter's shoulder.
It's quite all right, my dear. I'll be happy to go with these men and provide some clarity to ease their delusions.
He stepped away from Liara, who lowered her hands and smiled brightly.
This should give us a chance to get to know each other a bit better, won't it, Master Tithiriel?
Probably not in the way you're hoping, Baron Dianis. Come with us. Aladir waved with his sword, and Tirion fell into line with him. The circle of guards adjusted, moving to fall into a double line to escort Aladir and Tirion out the gates. Lydia remained invisible on the sides, continuing to watch Liara's reaction. She seemed to be demonstrating legitimate shock. While Lydia might have normally utilized the Dominion of Knowledge to attempt to gather more information from the scene, her analysis spell had taxed her dangerously, and she knew any further spells might incapacitate her entirely. She knew that Jonan remained nearby, maintaining his own invisibility as well as hers. He had insisted on seeing this, and she didn't blame him, given that his grievous injury might have been at Turian's orders. Liara sunk down in the chair on her side of the table as her father walked away, seemingly at a loss. She buried her head in her arms, and Lydia thought she heard the sound of muffled tears. Riala approached from the opposite side of the courtyard from where Tirion had exited. Liara did not look up until Riala spoke.
Can I sit here?
Jonan had woven no disguise this time, but Riala's eyes were a different color than they had been when Lydia had seen her before. They were the blue-white of ice, the color that rumors had hinted her eyes to be at birth.
Riala?
Liara stammered, looking up.
It's me, little sister. I'm home.
Lydia gestured to the window where she knew Jonan was watching and walked back inside. It was unlikely that the reunion of sisters would be focused on discussing assassins and Rethri cults. Lydia met with Jonan inside. He had slumped back down into the chair that sat near his bed.
Well, that was touching.
Where are we headed next? Lydia shook her head.
I'm going to visit Landon and warn him. Even with Tirion arrested, other members of that organization might be after him. In fact, Tirion's arrest might make them anxious, which could make them strike even faster.
A good point. And we still don't know why Nadelia walked out that window.
If Tirion shares his daughter's skill set, he could have talked her into walking out a window with deception sorcery. But it's also possible he simply was holding something over her. Information, threats, or something similar. There was a suicide note. The one that she was writing when we watched in the mirror. She managed to conceal the name Dianis within it. But that was the only clue I could find.
Jonan raised an eyebrow. Nadelia managed to write a coded message in there while she was being watched? Well, that's impressive. I don't think I would have had the presence of mind to do something like that. But I suppose we still don't know her exact circumstances.
Right. All signs point to Tirion having some kind of significant leverage over her. Hopefully we can get him to confess, but I'm not counting on it. For now, warning Landon is my highest priority. Aladir will see to the trial.
Lovely. When do we leave?
There's no we involved right now. You look about 3/4 dead, and even if that's only half true, that's still 3/8. More than an acceptable margin of dead for this assignment.
Jonan rolled his eyes. That's a very exact measurement.
I'm a very exact person, in case you haven't noticed.
Right. Well, at a minimum, take the antidotes we've been working on. Riala will know the most recent results. Ask her about the ones that worked best. They'll only work for the poison that was used on Kulciris, however, not whatever affected me.
I'm not sure any traditional antidote would have worked on the poison they used on you. It seemed to be deliberately designed to be difficult to cure. Regardless, I suppose the other assassin is probably still the one out there. Which means we might see the first poison again. Can I trust something Riala has been working on? Just finding out that her father was involved doesn't mean she's innocent. In fact, it should make her more of a suspect, not less.
Jonan shook his head.
You don't know Riala like I do. She hates her father. He was going to kill her little brother, Elias, for being born without a Dominion bond. There's no chance she's working with him, I promise you that.
I admit that if her sister had been the one in the mirror, I would have looked at this situation differently, but Tyrion?
No, she wouldn't work with him. Fair enough. I suppose bringing the antidotes would be a sensible precaution.
Lydia frowned, stepping close to Jonan and giving him an inquisitive look. He stood, giving her a crooked half-smile, and she carefully maneuvered her arms around his wounded limb to hug him tightly.
Thank you, Jonan.
He chuckled. Oh, I just nearly lost a limb. Not a big deal.
He sighed, pulling her closer against him. He was cold and sweaty, but she didn't mind. Be careful out there.
Whoever made that poison is going to be extremely dangerous.
Far more so than those would-be assassins I had to deal with. Don't get yourself more than 3/8 dead. I'll aspire to keep my fractions manageable.
Good. They held each other in silence for as long as Lydia could keep the growing paranoia in her mind at bay.
Chapter 21 Talion 5 War Talion limped and stumbled into the Dawnfire's light, still pressing his left hand against the wound on his side. He knew intellectually that the injury wasn't very severe. He had suffered far more dangerous injuries in the past. Nevertheless, that pain burned brilliantly, distracting him from the milder but more dangerous discomfort from overusing his metal sorcery. The change in light was almost blinding at first, but as his vision cleared, he saw pennants marking the exterior of a large Paladins of Taos encampment a few hundred yards distant. There were three large tents, the kind he typically associated with command centers or hospital tents, and at least half a dozen smaller ones. A group of tabard-wearing sentries spotted their bedraggled group immediately, and one of them broke off from his group and approached. The swordsman stood up a little straighter, hoping to preserve at least a fragment of his dignity. Velis walked up to his left side, still leaning on her hilarious spear-gauntlet combination, and adjusted her posture in the same way that he had.
Hey!
The approaching sentry waved, giving a friendly grin. Talion squinted, but he didn't recognize the man. He was short and a little heavy, but his short sleeves exposed thick muscular arms. Given the enthusiastic greeting, Talion raised his left hand from his false injury to wave back in return rather than attempting a proper salute.
Wow! Made it out of there already? Garrick is gonna shit himself!
He chuckled weakly alongside Velis and Landon, which made his chest ache even more. Asphodel left a few seconds later, and the sentry gave her a quizzical look.
Glad to hear we made good time, sir,
Velis opened.
Oh, sorry, I'm Call. No fancy title, just a newly minted paladin myself. You guys look pretty wrecked. Come on, let's get you to camp. We've got food and clothes.
Until that moment, Talion had never been particularly exuberant about the idea of clothing, but after the experience in the prison, he couldn't help but crack a smile.
Lead the way, Call.
The paladin camp was on a grassy plateau on the edge of what looked like a lush forest. Given the size of Velthrin, Talion couldn't be sure at a glance if it was wilderness or just a large city park. He didn't see any civilians about, which gave him a slight leaning toward the former, but that implied that they'd been transported a long distance in their sleep, which was more than a little disconcerting. As they approached, Talion tried to sound casual as he asked the question that had been on his mind since he awoke in a panic.
Hey, Call, you wouldn't happen to know where my sword is, would you?
Your sword? Oh, all your gear should be with your clothes.
Call waved a hand dismissively. Clearly he doesn't know who I am, or he would have made a bigger deal out of that.
I think I'm kind of disappointed.
After a moment of confusing self-reflection, Talion half-heartedly muttered,
Great, thanks. I spend my entire life trying to distance myself from my connection with that thing, and as soon as anyone else doesn't acknowledge it, I feel empty. Lydia would have a field day if I told her about this, which I am absolutely not doing under any circumstances.
Talion glanced over at Velis. She caught his look, but just raised her eyebrows repeatedly, which probably was some kind of sexual innuendo. He wasn't really clear on what she was specifically referring to. Their near nudity, maybe? But it was usually pretty safe to assume she was being lewd. At the moment, that was kind of comforting in its normalcy, so he raised his own eyebrows right back. She winked at him, grinned, and looked back toward the camp. I'm not sure exactly what happened there, but I was probably flirting. He tried not to think about that too much, and instead inspected the camp further. There were over a dozen tents, which implied a significant population of paladins. The tents themselves varied in size and markings. While there were lookouts, none of them had the look of a high degree of alertness, which indicated they probably weren't in an area that posed any actual danger. He didn't see any candidates from other groups, but there were paladins with tabards from each order represented among those within the camp. A small group of paladins of Eretar were cooking over a fire pit, and the smell of exotic spices made Talion's stomach growl.
"Whoa! Hey, are you injured?"
Call was staring wide-eyed at Talion's side. His arm was covering most of the cut, but there was still a smear of blood visible.
"That's... We need to get you to the medic! Come here!"
Call redoubled his pace, heading toward a white tent marked with a symbol of the hand of Lissari. Talion followed with a groan, Velis staying by his side.
"The rest of you can head to that big tent over there. That's where Garrick will be with your gear."
Call pointed to a sky-blue tent with a pennant embroidered with Eretar symbols standing vigil outside.
"I'd really rather get my clothing first. I think the wound can wait."
Velis nudged him lightly.
"Don't be absurd, Sal. You need to get that looked at. Come on."
In truth, Talion was much more concerned about his weapon than his clothes. Modesty had never been a problem for him, even if Velis did seem entirely too pleased by his present condition. He appreciated that when the others waved and turned away to get their equipment, Velis stayed by his side. That kind of loyalty earned her a lascivious glance or two.
"Got a couple patients coming in."
Call leaned down and lifted the flap that served as the tent's front door, allowing Talion and Velis to duck inside. The tent housed 8 simple cots in 2 rows of 4, each covered with clean white sheets. They were empty, save for the gray-haired man sitting atop the last cot on the left side. He looked up from his book with a hint of irritation on his face, which shifted toward confusion when he processed the intruders in his domain.
"Your paladin candidates." He folded his arms across his chest. "How are you injured?"
"Chain from one of those sentry constructs took a chunk out of my side, and I'm a little lightheaded from using metal sorcery."
"Don't forget that you were also electrocuted," Velis noted. "We both were."
"Played with your collars, did you?"
The older man stood up, patting one of the cots.
"Come sit down. I'll take a look at you."
He glanced at Velis.
"And you, miss? Why are you here?"
"Wanted to make sure he actually told you all of his symptoms. Also..."
She lifted up her hair and turned around, displaying a patch of scalded flesh on the back of her neck.
"That collar hurt."
"Curious. I've never seen that effect from one of the collars. It shouldn't be capable of outputting enough heat to injure you like that. I warned those idiots not to put a Dominion-bonded item into a test, but they... Never mind. Sit on the next bed over. I'll look at you next."
As the doctor approached, Talion noted that the man was wearing civilian garb. He either wasn't a paladin, or he wasn't in uniform for some reason. Talion judged the former more likely, but he considered the possibility that the man simply wasn't expecting to be a participant in the exercise.
"Move your hand, son."
Talion shifted his arm away from the wound. The doctor leaned in closer.
"You said this was from one of the sentries?"
The swordsman nodded.
"Yes, sir."
"No, sir, for me. Not anymore. This is no good. They should have shielded you before the test started. Those constructs are vicious things. You're lucky it only grazed you."
"Lucky? More like fast. But he has a point."
Velis sat down on her designated cot and leaned back against the tent wall.
"I think he did have a barrier, or, well, at least I did when the exam first started. Perhaps his barrier wore off before the combat began."
"How long were you in there?"
"Not long. 37 minutes, I'd say," Talion estimated.
Velis quirked an eyebrow at him.
That's awfully exact.
He shrugged. Seemed about right.
No competent protection sorcerer makes barriers that last less than an hour. It sounds like some disciplinary action may be in order. But who am I to talk?
The doctor shook his head, retrieving a large medical kit from underneath one of the cots on the opposite side of the room.
Sit still, I need to clean the wound and stitch it up.
Not a sorcerer, then, either. Wonder why he's here. I know they have life sorcerers in the Paladins, like Aladir.
Do you need a hand? Velis offered. Quite fine, my dear. I'll be with you when I'm done treating this young man.
Velis tapped her left hand on her leg.
I can take care of my neck if you'll let me grab the supplies. I'm a Jaldan. I know my way around a medical kit.
I don't care if you're Lysari herself, miss. You're a patient right now, and you're not in the field. You don't patch yourself up. You wait.
Velis sighed.
Fine.
The doctor was quieter once he began treating their injuries, never bothering to introduce himself. Cleaning the wound was relatively painless, but stitching the wound without anesthetic felt worse than the injury itself had. Velis held Talion's hand while the needle wove through his skin, which proved both a kindness and a mild source of entertainment as they played at conquering each other's thumbs. The doctor, for his part, seemed to ignore their antics. Once the needlework was done, the doctor applied a poultice to the wound and wrapped his chest with bandages.
"Who's your overseer? I'll recommend that they let you skip the next test."
Talion tensed his jaw, embarrassed by the idea of missing one of his exams due to an injury. "Garrick Torrent is my squad's overseer, but please don't do that. I'll be just fine."
"From your pallor, you've lost a fair bit of blood. You're not in any condition for this particular test. At a minimum, they need to make accommodations. For the moment, you can clean the blood off your face. There will be supplies in your overseer's tent, and get yourself some food and a few hours of sleep."
"I'll wait until she's done with her treatment, if you don't mind." Velis gave Talion an appreciative nod.
"My wound shouldn't take as long to deal with. It's fairly mild."
The doctor sighed.
"No one ever listens to me."
"Fine. Fine, you can stay, but don't get in the way." The gray-haired man cleaned the injury around Velis's neck and then applied a different type of poultice to the wound. Velis looked like she wanted to complain, and from the way she was eyeing the kit, he suspected she wanted to use a different kind of ointment, but she didn't say anything. When the doctor finally finished wrapping her neck with a bandage, she quickly stood to leave.
"Thank you for helping us both, doctor," Velis offered.
He waved a dismissive hand.
"Just don't do anything that's going to put you in here again."
"Deal."
Talion stood up and offered a hand, which the doctor clasped at the wrist.
"Thank you, doctor."
After Velis clasped wrists with the doctor as well, they finally departed the tent, eagerly heading toward the remainder of their group. Landon was waiting outside of the tent for them, dressed in a full uniform and with damp hair.
"How are you two holding up?"
He lifted the entrance to the tent, allowing them to slip inside and following behind them.
"Doing better now that we can finally get dressed."
The blue tent was larger than the medic's tent, but only had 6 cots inside. Talion's eyes tracked for the Sakess, and he found it lying next to the one on the back left side, across from where Garrick Torrent stood.
"You're late,"
the overseer remarked with a smirk. Talion patted the bandages on his chest.
"Well, I heard these were the latest fashion, so I absolutely had to get some."
Garrick tilted his head to the side.
"The others told me you got injured, but I admit I was a little skeptical. That shouldn't have happened, and I apologize."
Talion nodded.
"That's no problem. I expected to get hurt during these tests. It's not anything to be concerned about. Accidents happen."
"Separating me from my sword, on the other hand, that's a problem. A problem we're going to have a very serious talk about later, ideally when I have a sufficient rank that it doesn't get me expelled from the organization for mouthing off to a superior."
Lieutenant Torrent frowned.
"Yes, accidents do happen, but I watched the sorcerer put a barrier on each of you. An injury like that shouldn't have been possible."
He glanced at Velis.
"Your situation is regrettable, but more plausible at least. Most barrier spells won't stop something that's pressed directly against your skin. I watched what you did in there, manipulating the charge in the collar. Dangerous, but also impressive. You're getting a rank A for it."
Velis brightened noticeably at that, straightening her posture again.
Thank you, sir.
She raised a hand in salute, which Talion mirrored, realizing in retrospect that he'd been terribly rude not to salute his commanding officer immediately on entry.
It's fine. You can put your hands down. You're both sleep-deprived and injured. I've never been one for formalities, anyway.
Talion nodded and lowered his hand, feeling relieved.
Can we, get dressed?
Yeah, but I want to stare at your half-naked asses any longer than I need to. Come on. Talion and Velis surged toward their supplies. He noted that the former Queen's Guard went straight to checking on her quarterstaff, running an affectionate hand along the wood in a way that reminded him of his own connection with his sword. Must hold some sentimental value to her. He felt somewhat better once he was dressed, but his uniform shirt chafed awkwardly against his bandages. Garrick left the tent briefly, returning with a pair of wet towels, which Talion and Velis used to clean their faces. The dried blood from Talion's nose had spread further than he realized, and he felt mildly embarrassed by what he must have looked like to the others while he was wandering around. After Talion buckled on his sword belt and sat down, Garrick sat across from him and spoke.
Dr. Corrington wants you to skip today's exam, Talion. Since your injury was outside the design of the last test, I'm going to assume that overtaxing your sorcery was justified, since there may have been an actual threat to your well-being. I still need to talk to Colonel Wyndham, but I think I can talk her into letting you skip the next test and get the lowest possible passing score. Since this is one of the last tests, I think that's a good idea for you.
I'm not interested in skipping any tests, sir. What is my other option?
You take the test. I don't think they're going to make it any easier for you if you decide to take it, unfortunately. For safety reasons, I'll give a member of your squad an emergency signal beacon to use if your condition deteriorates.
I would prefer that approach, sir.
Talion looked around, noting Asphodel and Landon were watching him closely. Asphodel gave him an almost imperceptible nod. Garrick stood back up.
All right. I don't like it, but it's your call. I'll go get a beacon ready for you.
He looked at Velis.
You'll carry the beacon. It'll be your job to evaluate if Talion's medical condition poses a serious risk to his health. If it does, you will trigger the beacon immediately, regardless of his inevitable complaints. Is that understood?
Velis nodded curtly.
Yes, sir.
Talion suppressed a groan.
It's the right call. She's the most medically knowledgeable among us, and she won't tolerate my bullshit.
Your next test begins in 4 hours. There's food in the storage containers next to your cots. I suggest you eat while you can and sleep.
Sleep with 4 hours until our next test? What an absurd notion. The group spent the next half hour devouring the simple road fare they found stowed in their supplies. Talion sat with the Sakess across his lap, feeling more comfortable with the weapon both in his sight and the hilt within easy reach. For the most part, they ate in relative silence. Only Asphodel seemed fully awake, and she rarely spoke without prompting. It was Landon who breached the quiet with the first question of any significance.
Garrick, I've been meaning to ask, where are Teshvol, Eridus, and Kolask?
The lieutenant scratched behind his head. He was eating the same food as the rest of them in a rare show of solidarity, and he took a few moments to finish chewing a bite of jerky before replying.
Right, yeah, should have told you. They've been reassigned. Not many candidates left at this stage. We've evened out the platoons. Kolask and Teshvol got moved to 4. Eridus is in 3, since they've got a bunch of sorcery support types.
Talion glanced at Asphodel, hoping to see relief in her features, but she remained intently focused on her food. He turned to Lieutenant Torrent next.
How'd they do on their own test?
Platoon 3 was a bit slow, but they managed to get out of the prison in better shape than you did. Used a bit more subtlety, less raw force. Personally, I liked watching your test more. They're already out doing the next test, which I'll brief you on soon. Platoon 4 hasn't taken the prison test yet.
Asphodel frowned, pausing mid-bite to turn to Torrent.
Watching?
Of course.
The lieutenant grinned.
You didn't think we'd put you in a test we couldn't observe, did you?
She continued chewing her food silently, a disturbed expression on her face.
How do you manage that? Velis inquired. Sight sorcery? They probably have something analogous to Jonin's mirrors. And we know they have sight and sound sorcerers. That's how they set up my fight with the Crown Prince of Zixis in the first simulation.
Something like that, Torrent grinned. Explaining all the tricks would ruin the suspense for your remaining tests. We get better reactions when it feels real.
That slice in my left side felt plenty real. Good job on that. Talion chuckled at his own joke, but no one else laughed.
We generally take excellent precautions. I handled teleporting you to the cells personally.
I remember, Talion remarked with a nod. The others gave him sharp glances.
What?
I was awake when they moved us for the test. None of you ever asked about it.
Torrent narrowed his eyes slightly.
You were awake, and you didn't say anything?
No, I didn't want to ruin the exercise. I just prepared to strike if you or any of the others who were with you made any hostile movements.
I didn't want to wake anyone else up.
Torrent folded his arms.
I was totally silent. There's no way you heard me.
None of you made any noise. I assumed you had a sound shaper with you. Good work on that. But I saw you. I could see the light glinting off Lieutenant Banks' armor. I read her lips while she put the barriers on us. I was surprised you managed to teleport us after the barriers went up. Wouldn't the barriers have stopped the spell?
Velis silently clapped in the air, apparently appreciating his method of proving his point.
All right, you saw us. Resh, boy. Do you ever sleep at all?
And as for that, Banks shaped the protection spells so that they wouldn't block travel sorcery. It's a fairly advanced technique.
Could she, or someone else, have also shaped the barriers so that they wouldn't block metallic weapons?
Talion took a drink from his flask of water, wiping his hands on the opposite side of his now blood-stained towel as he finished his morning meal.
Nope. Don't think I'm going to sleep before the next test either. Anyone up for a walk?
Asphodel stood up immediately, drawing glances from Velis and Landon.
Yes.
Lieutenant Torrent shook his head.
I'd advise against that. You're going to have a lot of walking ahead of you.
A lot.
Asphodel shrugged.
Now is a proper time.
Talion stretched as he stood, and then nodded at Asphodel. His left hand settled on the pommel of his sword, the tingling sense of the metal encasing the jewel flooding his mind with comfort.
Let's get moving, then.
You two are crazy,
Landon mumbled.
I'm already half asleep. Have fun.
Don't reopen that wound, Talion. Velis's tone was stern. I don't want to have to sew you up again in the field.
He waved at her dismissively.
What are the chances of that happening?
Talion had just stepped outside of the tent when he realized he had no idea where they were going. After a moment of consideration, he wandered over to where Call was standing guard, Asphodel following close behind him.
Hey, Call!
Call turned, blinking widely when he took in the sight of Talion in his uniform.
Oh! Hey, wow! I barely recognize you! You look a lot better now!
Talion grinned.
Thanks. We're going to take a bit of a walk before the next test starts. Any idea where we're permitted to wander?
I'm not sure what the parameters of the next test are yet.
Call scratched at the weak stubble on his chin.
Oh! Don't think that'll be a problem. You're nowhere near any of the target zones right now. Guess you could head that way.
He pointed toward a dirt trail that led toward the nearby forest.
A couple hours of walking isn't going to give you an advantage.
Right. Thanks for all the help, Call.
No problem. Glad to help.
The youth beamed brightly, waving as the pair walked toward the trail.
He still didn't even notice my sword.
Bah!
Asphodel remained silent as they walked, her expression troubled. He expected that she would speak when she was ready, which more than likely meant when they were out of earshot from everyone else. The trail itself was thin enough that they couldn't quite walk two abreast, but the trail was lined with soft grass, so the pair ended up walking on either side of the trail rather than directly on the dirt. The transition into the forest was abrupt, as if someone had deliberately planted a wall of trees to mark the entry into a new domain. The sounds of birdsong and the feeling of the grass beneath his boots reminded him of simpler times, the hunts of his youth and the exertion of his days as a Kovasi player near Sullir. The trees were thicker here, though, and their bark was gray-white rather than the verdant colors of his home. The silence gave Talion time to consider his situation. The failure of his barrier had not been an isolated incident. While his barrier had sustained significant damage before it had failed during his fight with the illusory Kryzen Dek, he did not remember it activating at all when he was encased in Lysen's ice. So, is someone deliberately sabotaging my barriers, or am I missing something? And, if it's deliberate, why? Just another form of test, or is someone actually trying to have me injured or killed? The wet grass and the mud beneath were malleable enough that Talion was easily able to detect other recent tracks as they walked. Many of the footsteps veered onto and off of the dirt trail, indicating a casual or meandering pace. He noted at least two different sizes of boot prints, and the footsteps couldn't have been more than a day old. That's probably Platoon 1 or Platoon 3, he realized. So, they went down this path for the next test, and we'll probably be going this same way again later. That's why Torrent didn't want me to waste my time. The idea of having to retrace the path later didn't bother him. Getting familiar with the terrain would provide him with an advantage if the test involved traps or ambushes along the road, and he couldn't imagine any scenario that didn't involve at least some kind of physical challenge or surprise. When Asphodel had failed to raise her voice after they had wandered for several minutes, Talion turned to her. "You seemed enthusiastic to come with me. Did you want to talk about something?"
"Your dream,"
she replied immediately.
"You still haven't told me about it."
"Is that really important? I can barely remember it." Asphodel paused in her step, reaching out for his arm and turning him toward her. Talion blinked.
"It may be a fragment of a puzzle that I must solve."
He nodded, gesturing with his left hand toward the road, and she released her grip on his arm. She's strong. She wasn't putting in much effort there, but her grip was as firm as stone. Might be as strong as I am. "I don't remember everything. It's been days. The part that burned into my mind was confronting a hooded man. Like a child's drawing of a dark sorcerer, complete with empty cowl." He frowned. "There were corpses, too. Walking corpses." She resumed walking, and he absently paced her. "I had my sword. I tried to fight, but the runes dimmed and died. I don't think it meant anything. I've had dreams about failing to use the Sekes before. It's probably just something that worries me." Asphodel's lips tightened into a line.
"Where did this battle take place?"
"Here, I think. I mean, in Velthrin. I'm not sure if we're actually still in Velthrin right now or not, but it was in the city, at least at first. I remember being in a dark place, too. Not sure if that was before or after I saw the city streets. It's kind of a blur at this point."
"Was there nothing else?"
Talion closed his eyes, trying to recall the details of the dream. The walking corpses. He was running through the streets and through the darkness, and then there was the man with the cowl. And then there was a body. His own body. I saw my corpse. The cloaked man said something to me about it, but I can't remember what it was." Asphodel looked away.
"That is much as I feared."
"Well, that's disconcerting." "You're implying I dreamed of my own death?" Talion folded his arms. "I mean, now that I've seen that, I'm pretty sure I can avoid running into any streets that consist entirely of darkness." Asphodel laughed. It was a brief, fickle thing. A melodic sound like a single strum of a lute. Talion found something lovely in that sound. Something worth remembering. She shook her head.
"It is not your fate you saw, but that of the man you replaced. I do not know his name, but I believe he fell in that battle, and I believe he rose again anew."
"Ah, the man I replaced again. The man with the carnivorous heart. I'm still not clear on how I could have replaced someone else's destiny. You're implying that this is a future that was supposed to come to be, but will not because I'm doing something that someone else was supposed to do, but that this other person is still somehow aware of you or both of us?"
"Yes."
"Gods, that's... she's infuriatingly vague." "Okay, calm down. She has trouble perceiving individual moments in time. I need to be reasonable and try to converse in a way that is convenient for her." "Okay,
Why are you concerned about the dream? Asphodel's eyes narrowed for a moment.
Because you are one of the few elements that have changed. He may not die there, but elements of the vision remain true.
Talion shivered, recalling a fragment of memory. Legions of corpses wandering the streets, slaughtering those that still lived. And you want to know more so that you can prevent it from happening? Asphodel frowned, turning her head toward him while she continued to walk.
No, I must learn how to set destiny upon its proper course.
Talion stopped walking. Okay, stop. We need to have a more direct conversation about this. Asphodel turned, giving him a quizzical look.
Yes?
The city being filled with walking corpses is not an acceptable outcome, regardless of what your visions tell you. The Dalaran girl tilted her head downward, giving him a dangerous look.
You saw this because of your proximity to me. It was a gift of knowledge to be shared between us, not to be abused.
I don't see the purpose of foreknowledge if we don't make use of it to make a better future.
No, that is not our way. We see the way of the world. We ensure it is properly guided. To deviate from that path is to invite disaster.
She put her hands to the side of her head, closing her eyes and rubbing her temples. Disaster? I have a hard time envisioning something worse than dead men and women walking around and assaulting the living. Her eyes fluttered open. For an instant, he thought he saw them gleam green, like the eyes of the man who watched them.
The complete annihilation of all things, Talion. That is what is at risk if we deviate too far from our intended paths.
Talion folded his arms. That's a more solid answer, at least, but still lacking in sufficient detail. Who would cause this destruction to happen, and how? Asphodel closed her eyes again, raising a finger across her lips. She inhaled deeply.
You would, Talion. You would destroy us all.
I'm fairly sure I wouldn't do that. He tapped the hilt of his blade. Existence is nice. I rather like it here. Asphodel turned her gaze toward the dirt.
It is not certain, but it is what Kolask saw. A possible path.
The swordsman frowned.
Kolask?
She has dreams like these?
Only those who are near me dream in this way. It is part of what makes me an oracle. In your local terms, one would say that I am a caller of dreams bound with the key to destiny. This is a part of my gift, but a part that I do not experience myself.
Which is why you wanted me to sleep near you. You wanted to know what I would see if I was exposed to your sorcery. And when Kolask dreamed, she saw me somehow destroying the world?
Not just this world. Many worlds. Perhaps all worlds.
That's... Well, I suppose I should be flattered.
It is not a compliment.
Talion sighed. Clearly that dream contradicts my own dream, which showed me being dead, and your own observations that I'm somehow replacing someone else. So these visions aren't exact. They can be wrong.
The dream visions show the current path that destiny takes, but destiny may deviate from the path that fate ascribes.
The swordsman raised an eyebrow. The path that fate ascribes? So you're implying that there's a single way that things are meant to be, but that things are already not going as planned? She nodded once. So, what dictates the path that is meant to be? Asphodel shook her head.
That is not for us to know. It is the will of the gods.
Which gods?
Chiefly Calrissia, given that she is the mistress of destiny, though I do not know if she weaves this pattern deliberately, or if she is merely the medium by which destiny asserts its own will.
I probably should ask her why someone who believes in a different set of gods is trying to join a paladin order, but this might not be the best time. Talion rubbed the left side of his head. Okay, so what set destiny off its course in the first place, then? Shouldn't destiny be immutable? I mean, it's what makes a destiny, right?
I do not know. That is why I am here. I hoped your dreams would give answers, but they lead only to more questions.
Well, that at least we can agree on. Okay, we should tell the others about this. Asphodel shook her head once.
No, I have said too much already.
If destiny is already off its course, I think we need to consult people who could help.
Every word is another step away from the path.
Talion sighed. Fine. But sometimes stepping out of the way can lead you to a new route. Asphodel's eyes narrowed, but she remained quiet for several moments,
apparently considering.
You are not wrong.
I'll keep this in confidence for the moment, but at a minimum, I think we should talk to Lydia. A knowledge sorcerer would be a good resource for learning more about what is happening, and how much we might be failing to interpret these visions.
I will consider your plan.
Asphodel turned, beginning to walk back toward the camp. Consider it all you want. I've already made my choice. When they returned to the camp, Talion knew he still had hours until the briefing for the next test began. Asphodel returned with him, her crystalline hair shimmering brightly in the morning light. They exchanged no more words on the journey back. He judged that she had just as much to think about as he did. Slipping quietly into their tent, he laid down on the cot. He had no intent to sleep, but he hoped that a couple hours of closing his eyes might help to mitigate the growing pain in his side. Even that effort proved in vain. The smells of cooking outside, the light of day, and the sounds of the laughter and chatter around the tent were too much of a disruption. Every effort to turn his mind inward met with repeated interruptions. Sitting up, he laid the Sekhes across his lap and glanced at each of his comrades. Velis looked to be sleeping blissfully, cradling her quarterstaff in her arms like a lover. Landon had somehow managed to find a pillow. None of the other cots seemed to have them. And he had laid it over the top of his face, presumably to block out the light. He could barely make out what he thought to be Asphodel's shadow outside the tent, indicating that she was sitting with her back against the fabric near the door. Lieutenant Torrent was still awake and alert, quietly reading a book with a disinterested expression. He had made no reaction when Talion returned from his walk, and if he knew Talion was observing him, he displayed no semblance of care. Talion's grip tensed around the hilt of his sword, mirroring the tension in the muscles in his back. Waiting patiently had never been among his talents. Minutes rolled into hours, hours that Talion suspected were more than the four they had been allotted. Garrick eventually slammed his book shut, rousing a groaning Landon from his rest. The swordsman of twin blades sat, dislodging his pillow, and took in his surroundings. He looked once at Talion, and then back to Velis's still sleeping form, and then lifted his pillow and tossed it at her. The pillow missed entirely, hitting the canvas near Velis's head. Startled, she rolled out of the cot, hitting the floor and pushing herself into something resembling a defensive kneel with her staff.
"What the fuck was that?"
Even Garrick laughed, but Landon laughed hard enough that his face reddened, pausing only when Velis abandoned her staff to begin bludgeoning him with the pillow. Garrick set his book down, standing and folding his arms.
"Okay, you two, save your flirting for the road. You're going to have plenty of time for pillow games over the next few days."
Velis got one last hit in before Landon wrested the pillow away and tossed it into a corner of the tent. Talion found himself in the unprecedented position of looking more professional than the rest of his platoon mates. Asphodel re-entered the tent, saluting immediately.
"Sir?"
"At ease, Asphodel. Have a seat. This briefing is going to take a while."
"Yes, sir."
As Asphodel sat, Lieutenant Torrent opened the chest next to his cot and began to retrieve supplies from within. He thrust a rolled scroll at Landon and then received a crystalline vial filled with bluish liquid and what looked like a rune-etched stick.
"Unfurl that on the floor," he instructed Landon, who immediately began to comply.
Torrent uncapped the vial, pouring it across the surface of the stick. The liquid flickered and steamed when it struck the surface of the wood. He rotated the stick, allowing the liquid to fill the carved grooves in the surface. When the liquid was exhausted, he shook the stick in the air, grimaced, and then offered it to Velis. She nodded, taking the object and tucking it in a pouch at her side.
"For those of you who don't know, that's her emergency signal. Velis has the highest cumulative leadership scores within the platoon, and thus she will be your platoon's commander for this assignment. I trust you will treat her with more respect than you give me."
He grinned, running a hand through his short hair. Landon had finished unfurling the scroll, which proved to be a large map. Garrick walked over to the map, sitting down next to where it had been laid across the floor of the tent.
This is a map of the region. We're about 12 miles northwest of Velthrin right now, on the border of the Lysanthe Forest. He jabbed a finger at an unmarked spot near the bottom corner nearest him.